From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark, here again with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, talking with you about what's new in healthy living, sharing some down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, the number to call, 800-462-7413. And along with your calls, we have some topics to talk about, Zorba.
Right. We're going to talk about the FDA making hearing aids available without a prescription, a long, arduous course, what the FDA did right, what they did wrong, what it means for you. And
that one is near and dear to my heart, by the way.
Absolutely. Very, very, very important. And children who eat more fruits and veggies appear to have better mental health. Who knew that eating fruits and veggies was better than Captain Crunch in the morning?
So when Mom and Dad said that all the time, they were telling the truth.
That's right. Parents tell the truth to their children sometimes.
And what's our special recipe today?
Tangy turkey tostadas. Tangy turkey tostadas. Try saying that like, 10 or 12 times and see what it comes out as. But the recipe is good, even though the pronunciation is difficult.
I'm looking forward to that one. But now to the phones we go, Zorba, at 1-800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. Let's welcome our first caller now, a listener with us in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hey, thank you so much for taking my call.
How can we help?
Well, Dr. Zorba, you know the story about how Jack Spratt could eat no fat and his wife could eat no lean. Well, that's not exactly our story. Our problem is sleep instead of fat.
Yeah.
The problem is that I can't sleep at night. I go to bed usually somewhere between 10 or 11, mm-hmm. but it might be 2 or 3 o'clock before I get to sleep in the evening. My husband, on the other hand, he can't stay awake. In fact, he gets up early in the morning, he fixes himself a little breakfast, and then he dozes almost all day long. And what happens is he misses out on a lot of life, like watching our favorite TV shows or things of that type. Uh-huh. And Dr. Zorba, I'm not too concerned about mine because I can make up my sleep. But he is worried about his.
Sure.
And when I mentioned this to his doctor during a visit not too long ago, the doctor said, well, that's just age. My husband is 85 and I'm 81.
Yeah.
So
God, you don't sound like a day over 50. You've got great energy. Great energy in your voice.
I do have energy, and my husband actually has energy. He exercises regularly.
Okay.
He participates in art classes, and he exercises 4 times a week, on the rowing machine and so forth. And I do. I do Zumba and things of that type. So we're active people, but it's just that when we sit down and try to kind of have some quiet time together, he falls asleep.
Right. So what time does he go to sleep at night? When does he get into bed?
He usually goes to bed about 10 to 10:30. And as soon as he goes to bed, he falls asleep as soon as his head hits a pillow.
And then when does he wake up in the morning?
He wakes up kind of early, usually around 6 to 7 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
He
okay.
gets up and makes himself his own breakfast. And he tries to read the paper or something, but he usually falls asleep while he's reading the paper.
Oh, so he is falling asleep during the daytime, even right after he gets up in the morning and does things. So the first thing we look at in a situation like that are his medications and whether or not medications are part of his sleep break cycle. And I mention this because often that's something that we really don't think about. So we may think about things, are you taking a sleeping pill or something like that? That can do it. But no, even medications like a beta blocker, which is used for your heart, can be in such a dosage that it can affect your sleep-wake cycle. So one of the things I would do is I would go to the pharmacist. Before you go to a doctor, go to the pharmacist and say, look, I want to know whether or not any of these medications could possibly be responsible for my husband sleeping during the day. That might be part of it. That's the first thing. Does he get a good night's sleep?
Yes, he sleeps well. He usually sleeps, as I said, he goes to sleep as soon as he goes to bed. And sleeps until 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning. But then it's just watching TV, you know, that he dozes off. Mm-hmm. Now, if I'm talking to him, he's awake. He's wide awake.
Uh-huh.
But it's during watching movies.
Well, the second thing that comes to my mind is you guys have got to change your TV shows. This is obviously a TV problem.
Yeah.
Game of Thrones, where you have to just kind of concentrate on all the characters because they won't make sense. But seriously, what I would do is I would look at his medications. He's on a few. If he's in his 80s and he's alive, he's probably on it. Well, you got to be alive if you're in your 80s, right? He must be on a few medications, right?
Well, he does take Atenolol for high blood pressure,
mm-hmm.
But although his blood pressure, he keeps it under control. He the numbers are really always good. He also takes Xarelto
mm-hmm.
for
atrial fibrillation. Right,
yes, Xarelto. Yes,
right.
And he takes that. But when I mentioned that to the doctor,
mm-hmm.
I said, might it be his medications?
Mm-hmm.
The doctor did say something like, oh, it's just age, and, you know, just kind of brushed past.
Yeah, I what I would do, Atenolol is a beta blocker used also for people with AFib to keep their blood pressure under control. But sometimes adjusting the dose downward may keep his blood pressure under control and may also wake him up because beta blockers can make you tired. So I would look at that. I'd also look at when he takes his beta blocker, instead of taking it in the morning, take it in the evening just before you go to sleep. Sometimes that makes a difference too. So the beta blocker is working but doesn't have a peak performance early in the morning, and he might stay awake a little bit longer for that. And then the other thing you want to look at basically is it may be that, I mean, people do commonly fall asleep in front of TV. It, you know, it's because, you know, I'm not exactly sure why. We don't usually, well, I fall asleep when I'm reading. I mean, if I'm in the middle of a book and I'm
really?
Laying down. Yeah, if I'm laying down and I start reading, I fall asleep.
Hmm.
So now, when he listens to our show, does he stay awake? That's what counts.
Well, I listen to your program.
Well,
often.
Thank you.
He tunes in from time to time.
Thank you. As long as he tunes in and stays awake, that's what we care about. Thank you so much. Thanks for sharing that.
Thank you for taking my call. Thanks. Thank you, Dr. Zorba.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye. 800-462-7413 is our number. That's 800-462-7413. Before our next call, Zorba, hearing aids and moves to make some hearing aids available without a prescription.
Yeah, without a prescription.
Now, I've got to say,
yeah.
As you know, mm-hmm. I have hearing aids.
Right.
But I don't remember getting a prescription before.
Oh, you went to an audiologist. You went to an audiologist.
I must have, yeah.
You went to an audiologist. Yeah. You had an evaluation, and then you received a prescription. You didn't necessarily physically get a piece of paper with a prescription.
Yeah.
But they either sold you the hearing aid or they gave the information so that the hearing aid company, yeah. Beltone, Costco is like the number yeah. one hearing aid distributor in the country, could actually do it.
Yeah. This makes so much sense to me. Somebody can't hear very well. Go get hearing aids. Why would you have to see a doctor first?
Well, that's exactly. And first of all, it makes a lot of sense. Well, that's a good question. Why do you have to see a doctor first? And the rules that govern hearing aids are 40 years old under current regulations. They're 40 years old. We're talking about before the flip phone.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. And the other fact is it often takes people about 5 to 7 years after they have the hearing loss to get a hearing aid. Now, why do you think most people don't get a hearing aid? Other than cost. Let's put cost to a side. What is it?
They see it as a kind of a something that that people would see and they don't feel comfortable, maybe.
Vanity.
Yeah.
Vanity.
Yeah.
Vanity.
Yeah.
Remember, I mean, I don't remember who the poet was. Vanity, vanity, all is vanity.
Yeah.
Is that Shakespeare? I don't know. Maybe the grammar police or the literature police can tell me where that came from. Anyway, very important. And a typical hearing aid costs about $5,000 a pair. That's a lot of money.
It is.
Now, and it's not usually paid for by insurance. Medicare doesn't pay for hearing aids. Well, Medicare Advantage, to some extent, will allow people and maybe part of that with hearing aids. But it's a big, big issue. So back in 2015, Barack Obama in 2015 issued a report recommending that the FDA create a new category of over-the-counter hearing aids. Now, that's Barack Obama. It took two years ago, okay, in 2017, when the FDA wasn't doing anything at all. The Congress, believe it or not, engaged in bipartisan legislation.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Bipartisan legislation.
Mm-hmm.
The Republicans and the Democrats got together because a lot of them are old guys, and they said, hey, we can't hear either. And under the legislation, they finally said the FDA issued a report. The FDA has to now develop the program for non-prescription hearing aids by 2020. They missed it. The FDA didn't even come up with it. They were given from 2017 to 2020, they were given 3 years to come up with regulations, and they missed it. What were they doing? Didn't they hear what Congress had to say? They didn't come up with it. Finally, after Barack Obama did it, Biden issued an order requiring that they have to have a draft by November. They don't even have their final regulations. They just finally came up with the draft.
Yeah.
I mean, are these guys sleeping? I just don't understand this at all. But now there's a proposed rule. Thank you. A proposed rule that will allow adults with mild to moderate hearing aids to purchase hearing aid equipment online or without a prescription. This is really, really important. Now, what's important is that, you know, there is a group that says, well, they're not opening the floodgates for everyone to get hearing aids. The reality, they're opening it up so that other companies can now compete with hearing aids. People may be like Apple. People may be like Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe people who actually produce speakers will start to develop other types of hearing aids where maybe you can actually do a hearing test on your iPhone, not necessarily through an audiologist, and they'll give you a hearing amplifier. And for mild to moderate hearing, that may make a difference. And I have to tell you, as we've talked about it before, unamplified hearing is associated with dementia.
Yeah. Yeah.
People who have unamplified hearing withdraw from life, and that appears to be associated with dementia. This is a public health issue, and the FDA has been lobbied against by the hearing aid companies all the way through this, saying, no, don't let people just put hearing aids in their ears. It'll ruin their hearing. No. The answer is, if they don't get hearing aids, it ruins their mind.
Yeah, it's so important. And hearing aids are so great. I've had mine for years and years and years, and my memory isn't that great. My hearing is fine now. But I was talking with my wife just yesterday about these. We had a friend over who kept saying, what? What?
Oh, at the house.
And so after he left, I said, you know, he should have hearing aids. And Monica said, well, you know, say something to him. I feel funny about saying something to him.
Oh, just say something to him. That's the answer.
But see, my hearing is great, but my memory is terrible. I said, well, when I got them on my own. Nobody had to tell me. She said, what? I kept harping at you.
You thought you got them on your own. Yeah, she's the one who motivated. But, you know, with your friend, the answer is you should say, look, your hearing isn't as good as it used to be. I've got hearing aids. They're really great. Why don't you go to where I got them, or why don't you go here, or why don't you go to Costco, which does a lot of hearing aids? No, it's okay to make a suggestion like that because that person may just need a nudge.
Yeah. See, I'm not going to do it because I just feel funny about telling somebody else.
Well, tell Monica to do it.
Yeah, she'll do it.
She told you to do it, so she felt funny about it, too.
800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413 is our number. Now, Zorba, let's go to a voicemail from Wisconsin.
I'm actually calling on my mom's phone right now, and I was just wondering, the other day in class, you're not allowed to have gum, right? And I was chewing my gum, but I needed to get rid of it, so I just swallowed my gum. Is that okay, or, like, will my organs implode or something? that's about it. Thank you. Bye.
That's great.
That's great. That's great. That's great. You know, my mom said the same thing. Never swallow your gum, right? Never swallow your gum because it'll stick things up. And you know what? It's okay to swallow gum. Your organs do not implode. It does not become sticky, and it gets digested like anything else you actually eat. And I have no idea where that old wives' tale came from.
Well, I can't imagine swallowing gum.
Well, you wouldn't want to swallow gum.
No, I know.
When was the last time you chewed gum?
It's been a long time, actually.
Yeah, has it been decades?
Yes.
It's been decades.
I don't chew gum.
And yeah. You're not a kid, right? I mean, this was a kid's mom. Don't chew gum. Get a life. This was a kid. It's a good question. My organs are going to implode. The answer is no, they will not implode. And thank you for listening to our show.
800-462.
Some of these calls are better than others. People always ask me, they go, what's one of your favorite calls? That's one of my favorite calls. Undoubtedly, that will stick in my memory.
Absolutely. 800-462-7413, our number. And before we take a break now, Zorba, let's check in again with your favorite hand ringers, the Grammar Police. Actually, Zorba, we don't often hear from this particular division of the Grammar Police. This grievance comes in from Thomas, who's a proud member of the Email Police. Thomas writes, for email addresses, at is the correct usage, not to. It is an address, so treat it like you would a physical address that you are going to. You would go to the Empire State Building at 20 West 34th Street, New York, New York, not to the address.
Well, let's delve into this a little bit further. Email is rather new compared to a letter, right? You know, a letter has been here for a long time. So the pronunciation, the punctuation, and the treatment of the at symbol for email can really be discovered in many different ways. Now, do you remember what at used to be used for on the typewriter?
No. What do you mean?
It was used for cost. Like, you'll have five apples at, they would use the at sign, mm-hmm. 50 cents. That's what at was used for. That's all it was used for. Now, that's become the archaic use of at. No one would ever use it. We use it for that. So I will take issue with this particular grammar policeman, and I'll tell you what. I'm going to court. I don't think it matters.
I kind of agree with this guy.
You agree? Yeah. Well, go on. Is there something else in here?
It doesn't... Yeah, not two. Two doesn't make any sense with email.
Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah. When was the last time you sent a letter on email? Okay. You can write Tom Clark at WPR.org, although I don't think you'll answer any emails even if they write it.
Anyway, do you want to lend your expertise to the ever-growing factions of the Grammar Police? You can sign up by meeting us in the basement of the Alamo or just post it on our Facebook page. Just send us an email at
Zorba at WPR.org.
More of your calls coming up, of course. We'll dive into some tangy turkey tostadas, too. More of your emails as well, all right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health at PRX. Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number is 800-462-7413. If you have a question for Zorba, 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, tangy turkey tostadas.
That's right. And you like turkey, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I love turkey. You know, and I frankly don't cook with ground turkey very much at all. In fact, I don't remember the last time I actually did, other than in this restaurant. Yeah. But I mean, I like regular turkey, you know, which is there. I saw a wild turkey on the street when I picked you up for the show. There was a wild turkey walking around your street.
Really?
Yes, just walking around. I'm sitting in my car. I'm sort of sitting in the car because I got there early, having some coffee, and I saw this turkey walk around. And I thought to myself, he's lucky. No one's going to shoot him. He's just walking around.
Did you have your gun with you?
Well, the turkey we're going to use in this recipe is not as lucky as the turkey on your street.
Now, this recipe, it sounds really good to me. Tangy turkey tostadas. And then I look at the ingredients.
I know, too much stuff.
Yeah, it would take forever to do.
That's right, getting it all together. Too many things, too complex. That's right, too many. But for some people, it's not too complex.
Okay.
So, start out with 1 1/4 pounds of lean ground turkey.
1 1/4 pounds lean ground turkey.
That's right. 3/4 cup of sliced fresh mushrooms.
3/4 cup sliced fresh mushrooms.
1 medium green pepper chopped.
A medium green pepper chopped.
1 small onion chopped.
A small onion chopped.
2 garlic cloves minced.
2 garlic cloves minced.
Now, this is an easy part for you. Open up a can of pinto beans, rinse them and drain them.
Open up a can of pinto beans, rinsed and drained.
Can you do that? And then 1 cup of salsa of your choice. How about that?
1 cup of salsa, sure.
How about opening up a 4-ounce can of chopped green chilies?
4-ounce can chopped green chilies.
We're only halfway through the list. You're ready to fall asleep.
It's like keeps too going much on and on and on.
A tablespoonful of chili powder.
A big tea chili powder.
A teaspoon of ground cumin.
A little tea ground cumin.
1/2 teaspoon of salt.
1/2 tea salt.
At least 4 drops of hot pepper sauce. Or if you're like my wife, Penny, put in 1/2 the bottle.
Four drops to 1/2 a bottle of hot pepper sauce.
Then you need 1 1/2 cups of Mexican cheese blend. And you can get that anywhere in the Hispanic section of your grocery store or in an Hispanic grocery store. And this is cheese that's kind of, it's a soft cheese. It's a very common blend.
A cup and a half Mexican cheese blend.
That's right. 1/2 cup of frozen corn, which you thaw.
1/2 cup frozen corn.
Then you need 16 tostada shells.
16 tostada shells.
Are you still with me, Tom? 2 cups of shredded lettuce.
2 cups of shredded lettuce.
1 cup of tomatoes.
Cup of tomatoes.
And then if you like cilantro, 1/4 cup of cilantro.
1/4 cup cilantro.
And if you're still awake, we'll tell you how to make the recipe. The recipe takes forever more than 1/2 the page. Just reading the recipe already. So in a large skillet, you're going to cook the turkey, mushrooms, pepper, and onion over medium heat, 6 to 8 minutes. Very important until the turkey is no longer pink. Remember, just like chicken, you've got to make sure that it's cooked thoroughly through. And then you're going to add the vegetables. You want those vegetables that I said, the mushrooms, pepper, and onion, till they're tender, breaking the turkey into crumbles. Drain it, and then stir in the garlic, and then cook it for 1 minute longer. And you're draining it basically to get rid of the greases there. Then stir in the beans, salsa, green chilies, chili powder, cumin, salt, and pepper, and the sauce. Cook it uncovered for about 4 to 5 minutes until it's heated through. Then, when it's all finished, add the Mexican cheese and corn. Heat just until it's through. Then spread about 1/3 cup of the filling over each tostada shell. Sprinkle with lettuce, tomatoes, and cilantro. And frankly, you have a really good dish, tangy turkey tostadas. Now, when I have a dish like this, first of all, one of my favorite cookbooks by a guy named Ruman, and his first chapter was Think. I still remember that think. In other words, before you start, think. So the first thing I do is I gather together all my spices. That doesn't take me that long, but I gather together all my spices. Then I gather together any of my canned food. I don't do anything, but I gather it all together. And then the stuff that I have to chop, I chop it up. So before I make the recipe, everything is all in front of me. And this takes about 20 minutes of prep work before you make the recipe. But when you're finished, you can have a really tangy sauce. If you want it hotter, you add a little more pepper sauce. Like I said, my wife Penny always likes it hot, so I have to add extra, extra that for that. If you like to really the taste of garlic, you can usually actually add much more garlic. We have two garlic cloves. Sometimes I have friends and they love garlic, and I'll do a whole bulb of garlic that's in there, and that of course changes this. But turkey tostadas at your house, I mean, what could be more fun and festive with your friends? And if you want a copy of the recipe, I think they can find it on the net, right?
I don't know. I can't.
You can't.
Most people can. Yeah.
Most people go to ZorbaPastor.org to find the recipe. That's ZorbaPastor.org. And don't forget, we are on
Facebook.
We made a little harmony there.
Question for Zorba? 800-462-7413 is our number. That's 1-800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Buffalo, New York. Hi.
Hello. So my question for Dr. Zorba is I seem to have a very low heart rate, a resting heart rate, about 48, 47 beats per minute. Just wondering what could cause this type of slow heart rate.
Are you on any medicines at all?
I am not.
Do you exercise a lot?
I do. Mm-hmm. I do cross-training about 4 to 6 days a week.
So 4 to 6 days a week you do cross-training. So having a heartbeat, what's your height, what's your weight?
About 6 feet tall and about 265.
And pretty much muscular in terms of the cross training you do?
Yes, conditioning and strength.
Okay. So having a heart rate of 48 beats per minute in a healthy male or female is completely normal because your heart doesn't need to beat that quickly in order to keep up with your metabolic demands at rest. And so elite athletes can have a heart rate as low as 40 beats per minute, and they're just fine. They walk around. Now, older people have a heart rate of 48 beats per minute. That can mean they're on a beta blocker or they have something called sick sinus syndrome. That can be something that actually is quite serious. But for you, having a heartbeat that low is just fine. Are you dizzy at all?
No. The concern came about because my dad has a similar situation, and he recently about a year and a half ago, he suffered a cardiac arrest.
A cardiac arrest?
Yes. And he ended up in the hospital, then he got a heart attack. So he kind of has experienced the same situation as I do.
How old is your dad?
61.
How old are you?
I am 36.
Okay. So in other words, so your dad at the age of 61 had a heart attack and ended up in the hospital. And so does your dad smoke? Is he fit? Is he overweight? What's your dad's health like?
He smokes and drinks, but he also runs about 6 to 7 miles 4 days a week.
So he exercises 4 days a week, but he drinks too much alcohol and he smokes.
Yeah.
It doesn't make a lot of sense in terms of health. His heart attack may simply be from smoking. I mean, smoking causes heart attacks. We know that. But the heart rate of 48 in a 36-year-old guy, it can be completely normal. Now, if you're concerned enough, you can always get checked out. Your dad did have a heart attack in 61. Have you ever had your cholesterol checked?
Yes. So the doctor has told me that I suffer from a genetic condition where my bad and good cholesterol are always low. I don't seem to have, I get my physical every year.
Yeah, yeah. Did they put you on a drug, a statin drug at all?
No, they only suggested I take some fish oil medicine just to help with that.
Sure. It's not, and you don't smoke cigarettes, right?
No.
No. And you don't drink to excess more than 2 drinks a day, right?
Probably once or twice a month.
Once or twice a month. So those are really the important issues. The chances are 99% of surety that a heart rate of 48 in a healthy guy who's 36, who exercises every day, is simply a symptom of a good, strong heart. Your dad, the issue with your dad is he probably had a heart attack at the age of 61 from a combination of lipids, in other words, cholesterol, and smoking cigarettes. You don't smoke cigarettes. It's not an issue. The only thing you have to question on a regular basis is whether or not you at some point have to go on a cholesterol-lowering drug. Now at the age of 36, it sounds like you've made your decision. Get a physical, you know, every year. Get your lipids checked every year to make sure they don't creep up, you know, that the total LDL or bad cholesterol doesn't shoot up and the good cholesterol doesn't go down. Otherwise, I would not be concerned. You're a healthy guy and you exercise. Just make sure you don't take up smoking.
Awesome. Thank you.
You're welcome. Take care.
Thanks. We appreciate the call at 800-462-7413. Before the break now, Zorba, let's do the segment where we feature what our wonderful listeners are writing on the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page.
Our sometimes wonderful listeners. Oh. No, they're all wonderful. They're all.
Of course. Yeah. Of course. They are. This is called Facebook Feedback.
Facebook Feedback.
First up, Zorba, the following came to us from a listener named Mary, who writes, "My mother is 90 years old. She has one kidney since the other one was removed 47 years ago because of cancer. Her physician's assistant didn't seem concerned when I brought this to her attention. I was questioning the dosing of her 14 medications in light of a solitary kidney. I think this is a big deal and should be a critical factor in her care. What are your thoughts?"
Well, it certainly should be a critical factor in a care. We only need one kidney. Now, the real question is, why do we have 2 kidneys? And no one has ever answered that question, whether or not we need 2 kidneys. But whether you have 2 kidneys or 1 kidney, you've got to look at kidney function. And then if you're on 14 different medicines, you have to make sure that they're adjusted for something called the creatinine clearance or the glomerular filtration rate to see if it's the right dose of each individual pill. So the physician assistant didn't seem to be interested in this, obviously. But there is somebody that she can go to right away and look at it. She can go to her pharmacist, say, "Look at all these meds. Can you look at all these medications and see whether or not any of these adversely affect the kidney?" And also, you can send a note to your doctor through the electronic medical record and say, "Hey, I was concerned. I didn't get an answer. Can somebody please answer my concern?" You can always go back to your healthcare provider and say, "Hey, I want some more information. Can you help me? You didn't give me as much information as I wanted to." And you should be able to get that from your healthcare provider. And if not, got to switch.
Well, it's perfectly clear to me why we have 2 kidneys.
Why?
Because if we lose one...
Yeah, then we've got a spare.
There you go.
But we don't have 2 hearts.
I was going to say, we should have 2 hearts.
How about 2 brains if we lose one?
I could use 3 or 4 brains. Finally, Zorba, Lois in Beaver Dam, Wisconsin asked, "Can you please explain what essential tremors are?"
Well, first of all, it's a terrible name, essential tremor. I mean, there's nothing essential about a tremor. Hold out your hand, Tom. Hold it out right now. Do you have a little tremor in your hand?
Yeah.
Kind of little tremor. Well, for some people, that tremor is more pronounced. The amplitude is more. And then for some people, as they try to lift up things to eat or drink, like I'm doing right now, it begins to shake more and more. And that's called essential tremor. It's tremor with action. It's a tremor with action. And so it's a problem because if it gets to be too much, then you can have difficulty eating. And the other problem is when people have a tremor like that, mm-hmm. sometimes people look at you and wonder if you were drinking too much. Because when you have alcohol, often it exaggerates that tremor. Mm-hmm. And so people can associate it with that. But that's what essential tremor. There's nothing essential about it. We all have a tremor. Beta blockers tend to reduce it. And in fact, if you look at violin players in national orchestras, most of them are on low doses of beta blocker in order to reduce the tremor so they play the violin better.
Okay. Thanks to our wonderful listeners for all the Facebook comments. And don't forget, Facebook is the best place to read Dr. Zorba's frequent updates surrounding the COVID-19 pandemic. And of course, you can always send us an old-fashioned email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
More of your calls coming up, another thought-provoking topic to talk about. More of your listener emails as well. All that coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number is 800-462-7413. But before our next call, Zorba, nobody's ever heard of this before. Children who eat more fruit and veggies have better mental health.
Well, the reality is this is a big issue. Feeding kids in the morning, we know, makes them better at school. Did you breakfast in the morning when you were a kid?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, my mother always cereal, you know, something to eat in the morning, and would pack me up with, you know, pack me up with a bag lunch and send me off to school. We know that's important, and we know that now in the U.S., lots of kids, and especially during COVID, just get free breakfast, you know, in the morning. But this was looking specifically at fruits and veggie intake at breakfast and at lunch, mm-hmm. and looking at mental health, and you know, not just having cereal, Cheerios, and milk, but that, and it appeared that fruits and veggies, especially among secondary students, in other words, kids who are in high school, actually was scored higher on mental well-being. So we're not talking about actually learning in school, but whether or not it was mental well-being. Now, this, of course, this particular study took place in the UK. Mm-hmm. It took place where I'm not exactly sure what they do in terms of feeding kids. It looked at data from 9,000 kids in 50 schools across one area, 7,500 secondary school education, meaning high school, 1,200 primary school. And lo and behold, nutrition, if it had fruits and veggies, the kids scored better in mental health. So I think this says a lot about fruits and vegetables. And it says it's not just for us, it's for our kids.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, getting kids to eat fruits and veggies can be a challenge, especially among kids in the U.S. and the kids in the U.K. It's not a challenge in France. And you want to know why?
No.
They introduce it early. In other words, they start introducing fruits and vegetables and textures early on, whereas America, we tend not to introduce them early on. So that's part of the challenge. And fruits obviously are a little bit easier than vegetables.
Yeah, I'm thinking now I have a glass of OJ mm-hmm. at breakfast.
You got some fruits there. That's right.
I eat an apple, I think, every day.
You need an apple. So you have an apple every day. So you say, so you should do well in school.
I have a little pineapple here and there.
Pineapple. So if you start going to school, especially high school again, your mental well-being will be great. But seriously, it did show the importance of fruits and vegetables to kids, especially for breakfast in the morning. So if you're getting food ready for your kid in the morning, throw in some apple slices, maybe a banana, maybe some grapes, maybe something else. But we know that fruits and veggies are just as important as calories in the morning to get your child to learn and to help their mental well-being.
800-462-7413 is our number. That's 800-462-7413. To the phones again now, Zorba, a listener with us in New Berlin, Wisconsin. Hi, how can we help?
I taught school for 40-some years.
Wow.
Retired about 11 years ago.
What'd you teach?
Fifth grade. I started in fourth grade, but then I must have learned my fractions or something because they let me teach fifth grade. But shortly after I retired and started work, eating a little bit more breakfast in the morning, which is I eat a pretty normal breakfast. I have eggs and bacon. I have cereal with bananas. I have waffles and hard-boiled egg, some yogurt, orange juice, coffee, and every so often a little sweet thing. Shortly after I retired, I started experiencing very reddish cheeks some days, but without a fever. It was my cheeks were warm, as they are right now, but no fever. My forehead feels tight. I sometimes have a headache with that. My eyes get a little tired and blurry, and that'll be toward noon. And my wife has been egging me on for years to call you and find out, because talking to my doctors, I have a heart doctor and I have a general practitioner, and neither one of them, after I've explained all of this, seems to have any answers for this. So I knew Dr. Zorba might. Plus, you don't have a copay.
That's right. I don't have a copay. That's exact. No. Your public radio station has a copay.
Yes, and we do support public radio.
Good for you.
Exactly. Well, first of all, you obviously are having some sort of almost an allergic type response. I mean, you can get a flush response after you eat. We know that. We know some people get gustatory sweating. They get a gustatory red face. They get it with alcohol. You obviously don't have alcohol in the morning, right?
No.
Excuse me for making the assumption. I assumed a fifth grade teacher, even when they retired, was not starting out with a shot of vodka in the orange juice that you were drinking.
But there probably were days where I should have. But I taught in a Lutheran school, so that probably was verboten.
So, first of all, you might be getting a flush response from the amount of calories you're eating. You might get a flush response from the food you're eating. So what I would do is I would experiment a little bit, because it's not clear what that exaggerated flush response is. That's what it is. It's an exaggerated response, which is very similar to flushing. It might be from the medicines. Have your medicines changed that you're on since you retired?
The year I retired, I began having a little bit of heart problems in 2010. And actually started in 2003, but it has kicked up again a couple of times. I have some stents. I take three different blood thinner, blood pressure, Crestor kind of things for my heart.
So one of the questions that you want to look at is it related? Is the flush response related to your medications? So I'm going to give you a few ways to look at it. Talk to your pharmacist about the medications. Say, do any of them cause a flush response? That's number one to look at. Number two, if none of them cause a flush response at all, then look at it. Is it the amount of calories you're eating in the morning, or is it specific food? So the first thing I would do with that is cut down on half the calories you're eating. Do that for a week and see what happens. If that's your answer, then you'll know, I am eating too much. I'm getting a flush response from the amount of food I'm eating. If that doesn't give your answer, begin to remove one of the foods that you're eating, you know, 1 week at a time, and see if that flush response is coming from a specific food. So what you want to do is, when it occurs, you want to write it on your calendar, and then you want to write what you're having, and you want to see if you can find the pattern. Connect the dots. Thank you, teacher. Connect the dots. That's right. See, he's always teaching, even in retirement, still connect the dots. That's right. So, well, you see, I gave you a path. I may have not given you the final answer, but I've given you a lesson plan.
And everything you said, I have not heard from either of my two doctors that I've talked to about this.
Well,
so I have some new things to try.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much. And thanks for your service as a teacher. We really appreciate it as a society. You guys are never given the credit that you should be given for all the fine work that you're doing for our youth. Thank you.
And, you know, thank you, because you have such an entertaining show. You do a public service to people who need advice like I do, and some people who need it even more seriously.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks, Doctor.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 800-462-7413 is our number. That's 800-462-7413. Okay, Zorba, we love it when our listeners chime in to drop some knowledge on us. The following snack expertise came to us from Jen in Sandpoint, Idaho. Jen writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba, you were recently talking about how our food has too much sugar. While I agree with you on this point, another aspect is the serving sizes for snack foods in this country. I didn't fully realize how consistently oversized our average snack portions are until I started buying most of our food at Asian grocery stores. If you go to an Asian grocery store, check out the snacks, and you'll see what I mean. They are one-half to one-third the size."
Wow.
"Strangely, I don't feel at all deprived by the little portions. A few bites are enough to feel like I got a good treat."
Wow. You know something? I do go to Asian grocery stores, and I never buy snacks. In fact, I never go through the snack aisle. I'm going to do that next time. That is very interesting. The typical candy bar size in this country is 210 calories. But if you look in convenience stores today, you'll see that there are regular candy bars, but they are a minor part, or even like Walgreens. They're a minor part. They mostly have king size. I mean, where did king size come from? And you look at that, and the calories are between 150% and 200% more than the regular size. Good point. Fewer, smaller snacks may help your weight.
Do you have a health tip for the good doc to sink his teeth into? Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413 is our number. That's 800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, we have a voicemail caller in Knoxville, Tennessee.
My question is about oil. I always use vegetable oil, which the main ingredient is from soybeans. And the thing is, it's rich. It's high in polyunsaturated fats, which are the good fats, where everybody touts olive oil as being so great. But olive oil has like maybe a fifth of the polyunsaturated fats. Vegetable oil seems so much healthier, yet people, they push olive oil. And I was just wondering if you could clarify. Thanks a bunch. Bye.
Well, it's interesting. We know that olive oil, monounsaturated olive oil, is really good for us. We know that people in the Mediterranean Sea use olive oil all the time. They use it to cook. They use it in their veggies. They use it in their salad. It tends to be healthier for them. And they have less heart disease and stroke. But you're right. Polyunsaturated fats such as soybean oil might really be nearly as good. And I recently read an article review in the British Medical Journal that actually was looking at that and whether or not, you know, by just saying canola oil, olive oil, or flaxseed oils are the only oils that we should be using. And it basically said that we really should be using vegetable oil, sticking away from palm oil for the most part. And so that would include soybean oil. So the answer is, yes, I think using soybean oil is fine. People still will tout olive oil because of its association with the Mediterranean diet. But I certainly think that soybean oil is just fine for cooking. And I would choose that still over corn oil. Interestingly, the highest smoking point for oil is peanut oil. And our son is married to a wonderful woman who is Chinese. And they use peanut oil in their cooking all the time because of the high smoke point, the fact that they can actually stir-fry vegetables at a much higher heat with that. And so I use a peanut oil now whenever I'm actually doing a stir-fry because I can heat it hotter and cook the veggies quicker. Anyway, veggie oil, that's the main thing. Stay away from lard. Sorry.
Before we head out today, Zorba, let's take this opportunity. Are you ready?
Yeah, I guess so.
This opportunity to give.
I'm just reminiscing about lard. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
We want to take this opportunity to give one of your naysayers some airtime. This is the segment we call Disagreeing with the Doc. The following email came to us from Terry in Baraboo, Wisconsin, who writes, on a recent show, Tom read a listener question about floaties in the toilet stool. Before he had said the entire question, Dr. Zorba was saying, fat, fat, fat. I would argue there may be another reason for floaties. Here in Baraboo, we have had a number of elephants who perform at the Circus World Museum. The elephants,
I'm getting the gist of this. Go ahead.
The elephants do not have what I would consider a high-fat diet. In fact, I would say they had a very low-fat, high-fiber diet. In the past, the handlers would take the elephants down to the Baraboo River for a bath. Occasionally, there would be a solid waste discharge, and this discharge would float. After the elephant's bath time, there would be a sizable flotilla of straw rafts flowing downstream. So I would offer that floaties could also be the result of a high-fiber diet.
If you're an elephant. Thank you for the information. I will take it under consideration.
Do you disagree with the good doc? Feel free to float it past us. Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Stay well, Zorba.
Stay floaty.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web.
At ZorbaPastor.org. And don't forget, you can find us through Facebook.
And you can call us anytime. Leave your question at 1-800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is, are you ready? Carl Christensen. Our technical director is, are you ready? Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's ZorbaPastor.org.